Hello and welcome to Real Professional, the podcast where real professionals have really professional conversations. I'm Dread XP Rock on Tour Jans Holstrom, joined today by Ted Hinchke. Say hi, Ted.
Hey, Ted.
Also joined by production assistant Abby Smith, aka Scruncho. Say hi, Abby.
Hello.
And our guest today is developer and voice actor Jory Stoltz. Say hi, Jory.
Hello.
So we have the full crew today, and it's going to be real good. So DJ, drop that sick beat.
Beat drops.
Okay, so another week has gone by, our lives irreversibly changed forever. Who's ready for the gaming safety update?
I just want to say before the safety update real quick, I've been not making the hi Ted joke the entire podcast because, like, I think the joke is, like, very lame and easy. And I actually didn't even mean to make the joke. I'm so tired right now that you said, say hi, Ted. I instinctively just said hi, Ted, because I was like, I'm just on autopilot.
what Ted's trying to say is that he's lame and easy, essentially, today.
My default state in the state of nature is lame and easy. Like, we're talking about, like, the ideal of the state of nature, like the Kant state of nature. Like, I am, at my core, a lame dad.
Don't be fooled. He was a lame dad before this, too.
No, I mean, that's I've always been, like, internally, like, the eternal state of what is Ted, like, if you take Ted and you compress him down to an ideal form, like the diamond, the carbon compressed, is gonna be a lame dad.
I have a closet full of
backup Hawaiian t-shirts just in case, and like all of my socks, like the place between the big toe and like the first toe, like it's already starting to indent. Like, not even wearing sandals, it's already starting to indent to accept the sandals into them.
Yeah, I think Ted's losing.
For context, and since this will go up, you know, like on Friday, but for context, some behind the scenes for all of you out there, it is the day before the launch of Sucker for Love.
Yeah.
So yeah. We were all very busy working on that, and then I went outside and I grabbed my ritual horn and I was like, Jory Stoltz, and like Ted popped out of his burrow in the woods. Like, Abby was, like, drinking out of a river and looked up, and we all ran over here to talk with Jory Stoltz.
Yeah. You picked up a newspaper on your way here to figure out the gamer safety update. Like, you know, like, crushed at a diner, you know, yeah. Like an old 1950s diner.
You flipped a nickel
to the person behind the counter and took a paper off the counter that they have there.
And they're like, it's $1.60, you fucking asshole, while I run out the door.
Yeah, I rode my invisible leg horse over here. I had someone in the back with the coconuts, like out of Monty Python, came over
That's
how we all gather.
Is Duke a Duke, Duke a Duke. Everyone knows the classic horse.
The classic horse sound.
Duke a Duke, Duke a Duke. Duke.
All right, listen, guys.
Okay, so who is ready for their gamer safety update?
I am. I'm sorry.
It's the highlight of my week every week.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're not old, any of us, correct?
Ted is.
I'm old.
Ted and I are the same. We're the same age, and I don't consider myself old.
No one considers themselves old.
Good point. True. Jory, are you old?
Only my body. I'd say my mind is still young.
Good, good, good. So, whenever you finish with your work for the day, which I know that's difficult for Abby, Ted, and I, because our work almost is never, like, stopped.
No.
But whenever you end your day, do you turn off your PC?
Oh. Yeah, usually.
No.
Yeah,
I just push pause on the Total War game and I go to bed, so I can wake up fresh and ready to conquer.
Yeah, mine only sometimes. Sometimes I do. My computer's maybe off like 5 hours out of the day, unfortunately.
So this is kind of a hardware safety update, but it does apply to the gamers out there. don't turn off your PC at the end of your day. Actually, never turn off your PC if you can help it. A new study has shown that with modern computers, with modern operating systems, it's actually better for the health and longevity of your PC to put it into sleep mode or standby whenever you're done with it for the day.
Was this news brought to you by CryptoBot?
The hell is a CryptoBot?
The CryptoBot that like allows you to farm Bitcoin while you're asleep, like the malware that like gets installed on your computer to like use your processor to harvest Bitcoins while you're asleep.
Yeah, actually CryptoBot has infested my body and I'm just like, "Hey everyone, don't turn off your PCs. Keep it running all the time.
It's better for the environment. And don't worry if it like gets real slow around 10."
So, what actually happens is that these reduced efficiency, reduced power modes they use almost no energy, and it's better for the parts in your computer. You're not kicking up that, not spinning up that hard drive so often. Less wear and tear. And with PC part prices the way they are right now, it's best that you try to get as much use as you can out of what you have.
So that's actually like pretty much true for almost all mechanical devices that are like built to kind of maintain current. Like, have you ever noticed that like if your light bulb's going to go out, it almost always goes out when you turn it on, not like when it's in the middle of being on? Yeah, that's because that warm up time is like kind of the most vulnerable time. And I had a roommate in college that was super OCD, and I was like, every time I walked out of the room, he's like, "You have to turn the lights off immediately." And I was like, "Okay." And I like eventually told him that, like, you know, it actually like wastes more power to do that if I'm only going to be out of the room for like 30 seconds, because the on and the off, it's like the same as like the ignition on your car. Like that's the roughest part of your engine, is when you turn on the ignition. And that's why like a lot of the issues with an engine like will be an ignition issue. Yeah, and it basically ruined his brain. He was like, I can't handle that. Because he was like super, he hated the lights being on when people weren't there, but he also hated waste. And basically, I got him in the liberal AI paradox. And yeah, he died.
He just died.
Yeah, just right there. It was the easiest rent for like a few months, because he, like my easiest roommate, I mean, not for, like the rent was already paid, so.
You heard it here first. Unreal Professional. Folks, stop turning off your cars. Just whenever you get home, just leave that bad boy running. Pull it in the garage, shut the garage door, just leave it running. There's nothing dangerous about that.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
You can actually,
like, if you're trying to work on your engine and you don't see it running, like, how are you even going to know it's broken?
Yeah, and like, also, if a bed is too expensive, or if you don't want to walk all the way to your bedroom, pull in the garage, shut the door, and then you can sleep in your car. Like, the heater can be on, or the air conditioner during the summer. There's nothing unsafe about this.
Yeah, there's nothing unsafe about that at all. That's probably pretty safe.
Don't do it, because, you know, it just takes one silly person to be like, "Oh, well, I heard on Real Professional that this was all right," and then they
died. Did I tell you that I had a friend that, like, used to, like, try, that they used to sleep in his car, like, leaving it running because it was warmer? And I was like, "You're going to die." And he's like, "How?" And I was like, because of the exhaust fumes, like you can fill up, like if you're in a closed space, it'll fill up the garage and you'll die. And he was like, "Oh, like, is that why I wake up with these like incredible headaches?" I was like, "Yeah."
Oh my God.
I always wondered why, like, if I slept in my car in like a parking garage or something, or like in a garage, like I'd wake up feeling super sick. I was like, and he just kept doing it. He's like, "Yeah, it's war."
Yeah, disclaimer, just in case, just for Abby's sake and for everyone's sake out there, do not leave your car running in an enclosed space. You will die. That's just a straight up, you will fucking die.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning that this guy was, like, extremely homeless. Like, not, like, out of his car homeless. He had his car. And that's about the long and short of the things he owned.
Second disclaimer, if you're pretty poor, I guess you can sleep. No, don't.
Don't do that. Don't sleep.
Don't
in your
ever
car.
Do that.
You can sleep
don't
in
ever
your car.
Do
you're not with the exhaust on. But if you're gonna sleep in your car, take the key, put it under the back tire. Does anyone know why? Because if you're sleeping in your car and you have your keys on you, you can still get a DUI. And if the car's not,
That charge is called actual physical control APC.
Yeah. So if you don't have your car key on you, then you can't, like, they can't say that you have the intent to drive. So I used to always put my car key, like, wedge it under my back tire, So in the morning, I'd know where it was. No one would steal it. And like, no one's going to go looking under your back tire for your key. Now they might.
Well, now I am.
Now that this incredibly popular podcast is revealing all of my hobo tips and tricks from when I was passing out in my car back when I was a raging alcoholic. So,
welcome to Party Tips, the only podcast where we give you the sickest party tips.
Here's all the cool kids news that you gamers can't use.
Put a USB drive underneath your back tire that has all your games on it. I don't know why. I just wanted to segue this into a joke about games, but I fucked it all up.
So try to pay for your drinks with a USB full of NFTs. See how that goes.
Can I get a vodka NFTs cranberry?
$1 trillion.
That is one NFT, please.
I could draw on a napkin. Let's call it a physical NFT. Napkin doodles is a new form of currency. I'd be cool with that.
I'll take a vodka cranberry and I'll give you this picture of a monkey. Don't worry about it.
Look, it moves. It moves if you turn it the right angle. Moves.
Oh, you know what? That would be like a really good idea for like one of those like community dive bars. Is like, you know, every person, if it's your first time there, if you draw like a napkin doodle, then you get a free drink, and then they put all the napkin doodles on a wall, and there'd be like a big wall behind the bar. You know, like multi-layered, like those like, you know, those poster boards that like they just put band poster over band poster over band poster. They have the layer like a thousand thick of like you can cut through to get to old band posters.
You know, it just takes one drunk guy though to be like, oh, good, a napkin. Like he accidentally like threw up in his mouth and it dribbled out a little bit and it's on his hand now. And he's like, oh, a napkin. And then it just gets really crusty. I don't know. In a bar.
It's fine. I mean, that's part of the charm.
Seems that's why it's autobiographical.
Yeah, and they just start to flake off the wall, like, very thick. Because they just, like, it's enough boogers throw up and snot and drool and, you know, whatever else people wipe on random napkins hanging on a wall.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's all gross, Abby. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby, for that grossness.
Jory. I did say this would be behind the bar, so I don't know what kind of bars you go to where they let you behind the bar, but...
Yeah, that's fucked up. But, Jory...
I'm not supposed to go there.
I know who you are. You and I know each other, ostensibly.
Of course.
You don't have to.
I know that you are a voice actor and that you made Sleep for the Dread XP Dredge the Depths Jam, which was very good times.
Thank you.
So, tell us what Jory's been up to.
All kinds of stuff. Just, I'm all over the place with, voiceover work right now, and I've been typecast in the horror community.
Why do you think that is?
I love horror. It's a passion of mine. I grew up watching horror movies and, you know, watching Friday the 13th on Cinemax when I was like 5, you know.
Do you think it also might just be that the fact that like we're in this indie space and indie and horror kind of go hand in hand?
I think so. I think that's also part of it. But I also think that the reason so many people love horror is because it speaks to a really primitive part of us.
Well, horror is like an interesting genre in general because like it's like the most profitable genre, and it's also like the genre that is easiest for amateurs to get into. So there's this weird kind of double two sides to it, which is like you can hit big in indie horror, but there's a lot of it. So it's hard to like kind of break from the pack, but also it's like a very accepting space towards indie. Like, you know, there tends to be a lot more positive reviews for indie horror games than other genres. And so I think that like, you know, but also at the same time, it's like also one of those that because it's so indie, they're also not like frequently paying for voice actors. So it's like a weird kind of mix of there's always work, but it's hard to get credit or payment or fame from it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of people doing it right now, so but that's great in a way as well. Like I love to see so many people making so much awesome content.
How often do you get reached out to do a role?
It's gotten to about at least once or twice a month now.
And is that like too much or how do you feel about that?
Oh, not at all. I do my own auditions on top of that and I've done a couple of corporate jobs as well, and I definitely prefer working in the gaming industry.
Yeah, what's the difference? How would you describe it?
I would say a lot of developers are more collaborative. A lot of like indie developers are more collaborative, and if you have an idea or think something the character says sounds weird or strange, a lot of times they'll allow you to collaborate with them on that. And corporate jobs, you just stick straight to the script.
Yeah, I mean, they usually have that script like kind of processed out, so they're saying the exact right words, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's very corporate scripts are very I don't want to use the word manipulative, but they use language to sway you in a way.
They're very smooth, as in there's like no rough edges to it. It's very
yes,
slip into your ears like honey, no matter
what. It flows.
Mm-hmm. So Jory, has there ever been something that you've turned down for like one reason or another?
So far, no, not really. I haven't been reached out to by anyone that I've turned down.
What would actually make you? Yeah, I was about to ask, what would you actually turn down besides like the basic, like if it was like racist or homophobic kind of thing?
I do try to like look for things that I find interesting and cool. And if it's something that's just not quite up my alley, or I don't think it's quality enough, I don't think it's up to par. I guess that would be what I would turn down, is something that just seems like it needs more time in the oven.
Yeah. Yeah, I can feel that.
I had a question, a weird question, because I do voice acting, but not really, just if someone needs me. But how do you feel about voice actors doing voices that are not their nationality? Let me preface this by saying that I've been on the weird parts of VO Twitter, like voice Twitter. And there's this weird brewing discontent of like, you can't have an American dude do an English accent. And it's like, why? It's fine. Like, where do you stand on that? Do you do a fun English accent?
Oh yeah, I've been known to do like an old British man accent before. And honestly, all the British people that I've worked with think it's hilarious, and I haven't met someone that's been offended yet. So
I don't think I'd be able to continue living if I couldn't do the goofy German accent that I use all the time.
Yeah, I know, right? I think it mostly has to do with like people wanting more job opportunities for marginalized groups. Like, you know, why would you use, you know, a white voice actor to voice a black character when you can use a black voice actor? Is kind of, I think, where a lot of people fall on that. That's, I think, like, is kind of the rational statement on it. Like, you're always going to have like the two extremes, which is like, the one extreme is it's called acting. Anyone should be able to do anything. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it is acting. And then there's the other side, which is like, no one should portray anything that isn't their like identity and heritage. And it's like, okay, that's another side of it. And I think most people fall somewhere in the middle where it's like, you know, why would you hire, you know, someone that doesn't have that cultural background when you, you know, can. But then again, I also think that this is like a problem that mostly has to do with like the visibility and representation of certain groups. And I also think it's like a certain problem that it's one of those things that I think is like a real issue, but I also think it is one of those that's like, it's hard to find the rational, like what is the actual like middle ground here? Like what is the actual like rational response? Yeah. You can't literally only have people depicting exactly their life experience. Like where do you draw the line there? Like if, It's storytelling, it's acting. I've never fought a dragon. Can I not write about fighting dragons? Like, but at the same time, like, I wouldn't write about growing up as, like, I don't know, like, a young black girl growing up in, like, South Africa. Like, I've never done that. Like, I wouldn't know. But I don't know. I feel like it is an interesting question.
Well, there is the rational, like you were saying, the rational side of it is the opinion that I hold. And I hate to say I'm the rational one here, which is so often not the case. You should probably not portray someone from a marginalized group which has available voice actors to fill that role. Like, I'm not going to, if someone hit me up and they're like, hey, we need you to voice this 40-year-old Aborigine man, I'm not doing that. I don't know that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If someone said, can you do a goofy German accent for this character? I'd be like, yeah, because I'm not going to offend marginalized group, the Germans. Like, it's all about perspective. And I think, yeah, there are two Because Twitter is great at making mountains out of molehills. You know, it's kind of what it exists for. So you see stuff like, how dare you, you know, do a Kiwi accent, and you've never even been to New Zealand, and it's like, so, you know,
yeah. I mean, I also feel like it wouldn't be a bad thing to have, like, anonymous voice acting in general. So then you can really only, like, you don't really know who they are. You don't know, like, their, I mean, I know, obviously, like, if you like the voice, you'd have to look into that person, because you don't want to just work with anyone out there. But I do think it would be beneficial if you had, like, anonymous voice acting, where you don't know where they come from, you don't know what they look like. I think that wouldn't be, like, a bad thing to have, necessarily, because then, like, the creator's only hearing what they think is going to fit for their thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I think that, I think that a lot of times the question of, like, what is the correct or the incorrect thing to do kind of gets lost in the miasma of, like, gotcha. Like, I feel like a lot of times when people are, like, calling out someone for like, oh, why is this person doing this? It's like, it's more of a gotcha than anything. And it's like, oh, you did the wrong thing. You said the wrong thing, which is very popular on Twitter right now. But, like, and I don't want to come off as like an anti-lib Luddite or whatever. And I know that I've come down hard on a lot of that in the past, but because, you know, I'm a pretty big leftist myself. But I think the most important thing for me is, like, you know, the opportunity. Like, what is, you know, if Troy Baker's doing every role, and, like, it doesn't really matter what representation you see on the screen, if the actual real world representation in the job opportunities is not there, you know? Like, what do you practice what you preach, is what I'm saying. Like, do you do that? And I think that for a lot of people, it's like, you know, most people, I'm not talking about the people that are, like, inclined to take issue, like, regardless. Like, most people are just want to know that, like, those opportunities are there, and that, like, that message of representation is being carried out throughout the country, not the country, the company. And the first place people look is this character represented? And, you know, I think that that's an interesting question. And I think that, you know, would someone have a problem with a white guy voicing a black character if the creator of that character and, like, the development team behind it was, like, primarily black? And I don't think it would be the same issue, because the representation would be there in the company. But if it's, like, an all white dev team with, like, an all white cast playing black characters, then that becomes a question. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's certainly more nuanced than people make it out to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, there's no place for nuance on the public discourse, because, like, the public discourse is so, you know, it's like the Twitter verse right now is, like, relatively leaderless. Like, I think that we're kind of in a spot right now where, like, the left is kind of without, like, strong figures to follow, other than, like, the establishment figures that exist, like, you know, the Bidens or whatever. It's like, I'm sorry, I don't know, like, a single liberal that's, like, as fervent about Biden as you will, like, the average Trump supporter is about Trump. Like, no one, like, Trump supporters are going to storm the Capitol. Like, Biden supporters are not going to fucking do that. You know what I mean?
We've just reached a weird place in the discourse. Like you're saying, Twitter feels a little bit rudderless these days, since it's its management shakeup. But also, Twitter takes these small, shitty, and I'll call them shitty, it takes these small, shitty opinions and magnifies them in a weird echo chamber. Because I'm on Twitter all the time. I've been on Twitter pretty much consistently for 2 years. I run the Dread XP Twitter. I have my own personal Twitter. If you don't, I'll teach everyone right now the secret to Twitter. Never step outside your chosen community. Like, I'm fine in the indie horror community. Like, I know a lot of the people in the indie horror community. I have great interactions with them. I take one step to the left or right outside of my community, and it's immediately just, like, people taking stuff like that game, Sifu. I don't know if you guys have heard of that game.
No.
You play as, like, a kung fu guy, and every time you die, you get older. So eventually you're, like, hella old doing kung fu.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I know, right? And there's this big Twitter to-do because the development team is white dudes, and there's a bunch of people saying they shouldn't be able to make a game inspired by classic kung fu movies because they don't have the frame of reference. So it's like you step into the wrong discourse and you go, oh, no, I'm here. I guess Wordle. Wordle's pretty tame. You can just go to the Wordle part of Twitter.
Interesting thing, though, is that, like, for how fervent those discussions might be, like, they tend to kind of live and die in their own little corner of the internet. And that's what's kind of super interesting to me is like, you know, and I've said this before, and Jory, I don't know, this might be interesting to you because I don't know how like well-versed you are in like, because you're also a game dev, right?
I'm getting into it. I'm mostly a writer. Like I've worked with Kyle Frost a lot on writing with his games, but I'm just now getting into dev stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, and I think that it's interesting to know that like it can be really, really disheartening to be on these social media sites, like especially if your like social media output is one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, here's the thing: I also do like management stuff on the Dread Central Twitter. And that's the thing, it's so weird. A lot of times people like listen to these episodes or hear some things I say and say like I'm being like a bad influence or like I'm a bad liberal because of, but I'm not trying to come out and say like everyone kind of agrees that people live in their own little worlds now, like where the conservative talking points and the liberal talking points are completely fucking different. It's like we live in completely different realities.
Yeah.
And I've been saying that the reason is because of the echo chamber effect. And when I say that, people are like, well, you don't agree. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not talking about which side I stand on. I'm talking about like the real analytics. And what I'm saying is that like, what I've seen is that Twitter does like almost fucking nothing for sales. I mean, I'm serious. Like you can be extremely popular on Twitter and your sales will be like, you know, it can be extremely small. And I think that a lot of people expect that because, oh, my thing blew up on Twitter, that they're going to have a huge influx of sales. And that's just not really how it works. I mean, it's pretty unfortunate because, you know, you can look at a game like Riftbreaker, which is super, it's a really interesting case study because the Riftbreaker has done like extremely well. I think they've sold over like 100,000 copies. They're probably like closing in on, probably 50 to 100,000 copies now, which is really good. For a game of this size, like $30 game, indie game, small team, their Twitter presence is basically nothing. They've done very, very, very little on Twitter. Like their Twitter is like, you know, so much smaller. Oh, actually, it's kind of creeping up on ours. But like, you know, when I was looking at it a couple months ago, it was super, super small. And it's like, but it was selling like hotcakes. So it's like one of those things where, you know, Twitter isn't necessarily driving traffic towards people purchasing things, but it will be something that kind of like picks up as you kind of get more popular. And so like, you know, trying to craft your games around this discourse, I mean, all I can really say is like craft the game that you feel is like representative of you and like the kind of game that you want to make. And don't like try to craft it based on what you think is going to be popular on Twitter, because that's just not really gonna like actually kind of get you there. So yeah, sorry, I mean it was a long-winded rant about something that had nothing to do with you know, the stuff Jory wants to talk about, but
oh, I love talking about everything. So
yeah,
craft your game in a way that pleases TikTok. I think we've touched on this before. TikTok is damn, it's a crazy social platform that not a lot of devs are using. Like I went searching for devs yesterday just to add some to, you know, follow some devs because I don't follow many people on TikTok. And TikTok does not care. There's no room for that discourse. It's like 15 seconds. Does it look cool? That's literally what they're basing their entire thing off of. Like I put up a 13 second long clip from our game, My Friendly Neighborhood, MFN, 750,000 views right now. Just 13 seconds of like one shot from one of the guns.
Wow.
And the comments are just like, looks dope. There is no discourse. Like, oh, and looks like Bugsnacks, which has now become like a company joke that so many people have commented about Bugsnacks, a game that I did not know existed until after this.
I have to say, you're probably the only person on the planet that didn't know about Bugsnacks, because Bugsnacks was living in my brain rent-free for like 3 months. Like I'm serious. Like I was singing like ooh, Bugsnacks like to myself all the fucking time. I enjoyed the game. I need to go back and finish it. I'm only about halfway through, but a new Total War DLC came out and derailed me.
I know that feel. I still need to finish Going the Distance. Jory, you did voice work on that,
right? Oh yeah, lots and lots.
Yeah, you're the older brother, aren't you?
Yeah, the Revis character.
Yeah. That
game was a lot of fun, but it was emotionally exhausting, and I think once you finish the game, you'll understand why.
Well, even without finishing the game, like, it gets into some pretty heady themes straight from the beginning, and there's some real excellent voice work in there.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you definitely sell it. That's probably... I mean, the gameplay is fun, the story is good, but the voice acting sells the whole... It ties it together. And that was with Mihalik, right?
Correct.
Good old Kyle.
Oh, yeah. You gotta love Kyle.
Do I? No, I'm just kidding. He's
you have guy. To.
Oh, I have. It's required. It's by law. By decree, you have to love Kyle. So, was working with... you've worked with Kyle before, right?
Oh, yeah. He actually got me... He was kind of my shoe-in into the indie game industry. My first job in the indie game scene was an SCP Blackout.
Oh.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my follow-up, was if Kyle was the one that got you into the space. So, are you doing any work with him lately, or...?
We've been talking about getting back into Blackout here soon, but we've kind of been taking a hiatus after going the distance. He's been working on his stuff, and I've been kind of working on my voice stuff.
Mm. So you did voice work for SCP Blackout as well?
Yes.
Were you like the intro character when you first played the campaign?
Probably.
Probably.
Okay. Probably around 75% of the voices in that game.
I've been trying to place it this entire time we've been speaking. David Hayter. You have a David Hayter-esque voice.
That's one of my idols right there. I love that man.
Oh. Nice, yeah, because I was listening, I was like, what is it? And I was like, you know what, it's a little bit Solid Snake. I'm like, that's what it is.
Dog, hit us with a Metal Gear.
Yeah, hit us with a Metal Gear.
Metal Gear.
Oh, that's so good. That's fucking good.
Trap battle. Otacon.
Yeah, that all worked.
Oh, hell yeah.
Man, I've actually just started playing Metal Gear 2 on the PS2 a couple months ago.
You've been practicing, huh? You've been practicing.
I just put the game down because it's like, I felt very spoiled by modern gameplay dynamics.
Do you live alone, or do you live with like someone, like a relationship or like a roommate or something? Do you ever just like sit in your room and like do voices to yourself, and they just like kind of think you're weird?
I live with my wife, and I'm pretty sure she thinks I'm insane sometimes.
Do you ever have to do like really emotional roles where like she doesn't know if you're actually upset or if like you're just like doing voice stuff?
I always try to let her know. So, or I'll let our neighbors know just in case if it's something that's going to be sound suspicious, like I'm murdering someone.
Yeah. Literally, I want to fucking kill you. And you just do it over and over again. Your neighbors are like, honey, we should call the cops.
Jory's setting up his alibi, the podcast right now in court. This episode's going to be known as Exhibit A. Where it's like, he's, you know, he said he was recording a podcast, but we heard a lot of screaming.
Mm-hmm.
I had the on-the-air sign up, so.
Oh, do you have an on-the-air sign?
No, I'm just playing. Aww.
I was thinking that'd be cool to have for, like,
that would be really
podcaster
sweet.
Podcaster or voice actor, just hang up your on-the-air sign and just tap it.
I'm going to get one for my cat, so she can, like, not put her butt in my face when I'm, like, doing stuff. That'd be nice.
Tap the sign. Be like, get out of here.
Yeah, she'll be like, okay. She's recording things.
That's like the worst for me, because I just recently started doing little bits of voice work here and there. Like, I was in the bins. I did like a line for the last Dread X collection. But I also record. I'm the narrator for a web series for Dread Central. And the hardest thing about doing that is having my wife like in the same room. It's weirdly embarrassing to, like, record audio. It's gotten better lately, but whenever I first started, it was a headache. Did you ever run into that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of times, I'll just be like, ask her to go for a walk or something to get into headspace at the very least. But I've gotten better about it recently, but it was definitely a hurdle to get over. because you do have to be in a certain headspace to get into the character. And sometimes knowing that somebody's listening can kind of affect that. But that's definitely a hurdle that every voice actor needs to get over.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I do a lot of recordings for Dread stuff, too, with my 10 videos. And then, you know, I've done a lot of like voice stuff in the past for games and whatnot. And like, that was always really hard. I'm not living with anyone right now except for my cat. But before, when I was living with people, I did used to have to like warn them and say, hey, look, I'm going to be like emotional and crying in there, but I'm not actually. And they're like, okay. So it was just always like kind of weird. And like, sometimes it is kind of hard to get into that mood or mindset when in the back of your mind, you're like, there's people listening to this right now. Definitely.
I had to get used to that so long ago. Like when I was doing interviews for press roundtables and things like that, you just really have to get used to it. I mean, Abby's seen me work too. Like I kind of like snap into my interview mode, you know? Like I'm a pretty different person in front of the camera.
Interview mode.
What'd you say?
Are you though? You're not really. You're pretty consistent. Like, you have an interview, like, an interview questionnaire kind of approach, but, like, I would say, like,
it's like, when I hit the floor and I start doing my, like, business networking, that kind of, like, stuff when I know I'm being observed, it's like, I kind of switch gears, you know, between mm-hmm. that and my downtime. Like, there's a big difference when we're playing billiards versus when I'm on camera, you know what I mean?
Or Chutes and Ladders, yeah.
I'm playing Chutes and Ladders, I'm just asleep.
Yeah, I know. That was the joke. I'm crying. Oh, good, it's okay.
Yeah, I definitely get that, though, like, because, like, doing Dread the Unsolved, I have to go from, like, my normal speaking voice, and you have to get into, especially doing narration on something spooky, you have to go straight from, like, your normal speaking voice to, like, this week on Dread the Unsolved. Like, it's difficult sometimes to get into that headspace when there's other people around. I can't be at my spookiest whenever someone's watching me. Like, don't look at me. I'm trying to be spooky. Don't look at me.
I don't know. Like, you kind of just gotta learn how to, like, for me, it was just brute force. Like, I was so nervous the first time I was ever, like, recording myself or on camera or whatever. You just, like, the more you do it and the more, you know what actually helps me? This is actually what helps me. Seeing other people's process, like, kind of watching them as they do it. Cause, like, you kind of realize that, like, everyone kind of goes through the same thing. And then when you see, like, an old vet, like if someone that's doing it for a long time and the kind of the way that they just kind of like ease into it. It's like a really good example of like, hey, you know, any of us can do this.
The most important thing that I've learned from talking with voice actors and that's kind of why I hit you up, Jory. I like talking to voice actors. I feel like, and not to like hurt my arm patting you on the back or anything, but I think voice actors are kind of, they're not held up as high as the rest of like the crew whenever it comes to game development a lot of the time. I mean, you got your Troy Bakers and your Laura Baileys that are always going to get like the press for being in every game. But it's just a job. I'm not going to say thankless. It's not thankless. You get paid for what you do, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem as glamorous sometimes.
Right.
Unless you are Troy Baker. But the weird thing with Troy Baker is, I know he's good, but how good are you that I can immediately go, oh, hey, it's Troy Baker. Just variations of Troy Baker voice. It's kind of the Mark Hamill problem where...
Exactly. Anytime, he's got two voices.
Yeah. Anytime he tries to sound creepy, it's just like, oh, it's the Joker.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But if you need a middle-aged white dude to do some action, you call up Troy Baker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's just, I think with Troy Baker, he's got this switch where he can just all of a sudden just pop into any emotion that someone can feel. It's just bizarre to watch him work. He truly is great and he deserves, you know, all the credit.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, it's kind of that Mark Hamill space of he's got two voices, but he's very good at those two voices.
Right, right.
But the most important thing I've learned whenever I started recording myself and, you know, all that other stuff is to always have a drink nearby. Cause holy shit, how noticeable are mouth clicks?
I've had to edit like 15 hours of voiceover before. And sometimes it's not my voiceover. I've edited other people's voiceover and it's a nightmare just going in between every you know, every little breath and click and trying to remove everything and make it sound really crisp. So I think as you progress in voiceover, you start to learn how to not breathe in between words and sentences.
Stop breathing. Just don't do it. That's our advice. No more breathing.
Sit on your couch. Suffocate. Breaths are kind of easy to cut around. It's the mouth clicks that kill me, just from having to drive a mouth.
Because they're right in the middle of the word.
Yeah.
The sentence.
So I always keep like a gallon of water next to my couch now whenever I'm recording.
Yeah, I got a huge jug of water by me at all times.
Sometimes it's the wet sounds though too. I didn't want to like say it, but like sometimes you get the wet sounds where it's like you can tell that the inside of your mouth is wet, which you like everybody knows, but like when it comes through in a ring, I just like I literally twitch for a second. I'm like, ugh. No. Oh no. It's the mouth wetness.
There's definitely you have to find a healthy balance between being hydrated and getting like the juicy gums where your mouth's just too juicy to record that day.
It's true though, and nobody talks about it.
I'll talk about it right now. Yeah.
You how bad it is when I'm recording 10 videos and like you hear like that gumminess that can come through if your mouth is just a little too wet.
Apparently, apples help with that.
What helps with that?
Apples.
Really?
I've heard that apples help, but I don't know if that's scientifically, you know, accurate.
Interesting.
If you got a bad case of the juicy mouth, just get some apples.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, though, because your mouth does make, like, a variety of different noises, like, based on what you drink and eat and stuff. But, like, especially with kind of drinks, because I record lines for those videos at, like, whenever I can fit it in. So sometimes it's in the morning when I have my coffee. Sometimes it's at night when I'm having a drink or something. And, like, sometimes I just have water. So it's, like, weird because it really does change the entire atmosphere within inside your mouth.
What you should do before you record to get the best sound for what you put in your mouth is to eat another voice actor.
I've heard this is true. I have another voice actor I'm looking to eat, so.
All right, well, you eat that person, and then you can come see me, and then I'll absorb both the things that you guys have.
That's too much Highlander power.
That's too much. That's too much power for one person.
The real pro move is to like find him, wait for him to eat the other voice actor, and then eat him during his quickening. Because that is how you. Did anyone else watch Highlander?
Yeah. There can be only one.
Yeah.
It's Troy Baker.
I honestly like, you know, a lot of people love the movies, and the first movie is great. The second, third, and fourth are like, what? But the second one's okay. What I'm saying, though, is that the TV show, I unabashedly love that. It's so cheesy. It's so, like, 80s or 90s TV show, you know?
Where,
like,
it's got a fucking Queen theme song. It's so
here
good.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so
good. I just imagine.
I watched, like, the first season again on a plane ride to Europe, and I won't say it holds up, but it's still fun.
That's Europe prep for everyone. Like, on your way to Europe, you have to watch Highlander, the TV series.
Yeah, that's actually the law. They make you watch it on the plane before you land in England or Scotland. Like, they will be like, have you watched the entire series of Highlander? And you're like, yeah.
I'm just imagining, like, the quickening for voice actors, but, like, it's Troy Baker sitting in his dressing room, and they're like, Mr. Baker, we've brought you the person who does narration for the Grubhub ads, and he's like, oh, excellent. And they just push like a screaming, crying voice actor into his room and close the door. You just hear like snarling.
That's why David Hayter was so upset when Kiefer Sutherland got the role of Snake, because he knew it was coming. It's like, oh no. Police come in and like, you know, wheel him in front of Kiefer Sutherland so he can unhinge his jaw in an unholy union.
David Hayter lives in fear every day. Since that happened, he like goes outside And he's like, is there anybody here? And he's like, I see you, Kiefer. And he, like, pops out of a bush, and he's like, oh, I'll get you next time, David. And he just, every day, it's just a battle.
The worst part of video game Highlander, or voice actor Highlander, is that you have to eat them toes to mouth so that they can scream the whole time. And that's really the most disturbing part.
And it can take a while.
Yeah, it can take a while. It's like a snake slowly slithering up the bottom.
But, like,
time down.
Real pros, like Troy Baker, he can do it in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. That's why he comes at such a rate. He's like, I charge higher than anyone else in the industry, but it's also, I can also, like, when I unhinge my jaw, my saliva is a natural lubricant, and I can consume.
He's like a Komodo
seconds. Yeah,
like a Komodo dragon. His mouth
Komodo
is
dragons,
like poisonous.
They kind of slow because their saliva is poisonous, but like an anaconda, that's the one that like kind of consumes you whole. Yeah, but he can do it quicker than anaconda.
I love this conversation.
He's like an anaconda mixed with a crocodile. Yeah.
I love everything about this conversation, but we are nearing the end of our hour, and it is the day before launch.
Oh,
so,
wow.
What do we even talk about today?
We talked about voice acting and Kiefer Sutherland hunting David Hayter to the ends of the earth.
And Troy Baker, alligator man.
Troy Baker, colon, alligator man.
This is Troy Baker, the alligator. So he's an elevator.
Like Jory, where can people find you on the internet if they want to hire your David Hayter voice?
Voices.com or Twitter.
Or Twitter.
Twitter.
What's your name on Twitter?
Jory Stoltz, VA.
Abby, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on the Twitter at ScrunchOG, or the Instagram at scruncho.speaky, and now on TikTok at speakeasy.
I can tell you straight off that Abby's TikTok is fire.
Thank you. Thank you, Yas. I started it last week and I have no idea what I'm doing.
It's still pretty good, though. I enjoy the content that you're posting. Ted, where can we find you on the internet?
Don't. I'm invisible. You can find me at DreadHenchke or DreadXP Twitter. I don't really, I've said this before, I say it every episode, I don't really use Twitter. Like personally, because I have a certain amount of time set aside for either tweeting or touching grass, and it's touching grass is one every time. So that's where I'm at in my life.
And you can find me on the Twitter at DreadXP _ or at HorrorPlayed for my personal account, where I think the last thing I posted was that I went to a pharmacy and they took away my COVID shots. So that's the kind of content that you can look forward to on my personal Twitter.
Oh, no. I like that a lot. I went to a pharmacy and they took away my COVID shots. That's really
amazing.
Funny.
That's good stuff.
That's a quality joke, sir.
Yeah, you can find the evidence that I used to be a comedy writer on my personal Twitter. And then on Instagram, it's at DreadXP Games. On TikTok, DreadXP Games. On Facebook, DreadXP. Shout out once again every episode to our one Polish fan who likes everything we post on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Poland.
Hi, Poland. Hi, Polish person. Good job. Keep up the good work liking my posts.
You're really carrying our Facebook right now.
It's a big, big, big part of our company strategy is the one poll that.
The one poll. It's Jeff Bezos's burner Polish account. That's,
oh my god! Really,
we're trying to court him.
Yeah.
But Jory, thanks for coming on. I'm always happy to talk with people from the game industry. That's why I host a podcast about it.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jory Stoltz. Play us out.
I have no idea what to say here. But thank you so much for listening.
Can you drop
and have a nice day.
A freestyle that you can drop?
Yeah.
I don't.
Jory, the number one Tory. I don't know.